Just for the committee members' information, today and tomorrow we're on work session on ODOT's budget. Wednesday we have a public hearing on a number of bills that's been assigned to the subcommittee. Thursday and Friday, if we maintain schedule, is economic development. And so, at least today and tomorrow, as we are on work session, the House members were real good about showing up this morning and admonished my good friends on the Senate that we need to be here shortly at 8 o'clock or after if we can, so we can, because the Senate is going in at 9:45, I think, and it kind of puts a crimp in our meeting. Ms. Jordan, would you like to begin by making any comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to provide you with some of the information that you'd asked for last week. You'd asked for a one-page handout that would give you some information that you could carry around with you to share with members as you talk about the ODOT budget. You couldn't do it in one page, but I provided you with some of the material that you've seen through your budget presentations, and that is attached. You have the bubble chart that explains the revenue sources and amounts and the program uses and those amounts. And that's the most concise information that you will be able to pull all of the pieces of ODOT's budget together in that chart. If you go through it, you can see that the revenues are detailed, and then it shows how the money goes to cities and counties before it gets to the ODOT budget, and then where the money goes in the ODOT budget. And then on the bottom left corner of that chart, it shows the proportions that are allocated in the highway program, which is the largest part of that budget. And on the back side is an explanation of what the sources of the funds are and what those uses are, so you can readily have that at your fingertips. The other handout that you have is a summary of the department's budget showing a comparison of their actual revenues, the estimates and the budget requests on their revenues and their expenditures following that by program area and within each program the amount. So you can explain that those are right behind the bubble chart. And then finally, you have a second chart that just focuses on the highway dollars to the road, which is a question that comes up from time to time, how much money is actually getting to the roads and how much is going to other programs. And that's the last chart in the packet that you have there. So it details the governance recommended budget. That's not after any adjustments that the subcommittee will make. We can summarize that at the end. And the one more piece of information that I didn't attach separate, in your program budget on pages 96 to 101, there are some very good charts relating to the SIP and how the SIP fits into the budget. Page 100 is a chart that shows the actual contracts that are carrying over from the current fiscal year into this fiscal year. It has a highlight then the new project in each of the program areas, and then the combined totals. And that is a very good representation of the kinds of budgets that will be in the biennium to be adopt the budget.
Are there any questions by committee members? My question I have here is on the third sheet, the program budget. One more. I think put that in. Okay. Under maintenance, it has broken out surface repair, drainage, roadside vegetation. Is this in compliance with our intent to zero base that particular budget? The numbers that you see there?
Mr. Chair, these are this is the budget as the department has presented it for 99-2001, the information that was provided by the department for zero base works off of that the far right-hand corner for the budget 99-2001. So when you pull out your zero base chart that the department handed you, it'll be the percentages from this amount.
Okay, so they will match out.
They will match out.
All right. Second question is, there were two areas we targeted for zero-based budgeting. One was maintenance, the other one was service.
Central services.
Central services.
That's where, at the end of your pages aren't numbered, but it's okay. The second one from the end of that panel.
Okay, Grace, would you and Mike Morris come up? Linda Gilbert, do you want to come up? The item under Central Services identified as government relations, communications, public affairs, and employee communication, going from $1.2 million in 95-97 to $4.5 million, and now it's going up to $5.3 million in this next phone. My question is, how much of that is the federal lobbyists that you have in D.C.?
Mr. Chair, we just got the handout. Could you repeat again the page with the question?
And Central Services.
Okay.
And over on the left-hand side is communication. It says government relations, public affairs, and employee communication. It was $1.2 million in 95-97. It went up to $4.5 million in 97-99. Now it's going up to $5.3 million. My question is, does this include your federal lobby effort at the federal level on this?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Grace Cronican, Director of the Department. Initially, when you say it went from 95-97 to 97, first column that you have of numbers, you'll notice that the director's office went down about $2 million. He's worked in direct relationship with each other, so the numbers have really been fairly constant over the course. The federal lobbyist has been fairly constant over the course. I don't believe it's gone up except for whatever the cost of inflation has been. It's been in there.
Well, Grace, what I'm trying to find out is, for what we're spending for a federal lobbyist, I don't see any breakout on what that position does, number one. Number two, how much money has that person justified in additional revenue from the federal government for the position that we pay to have there?
Mr. Chairman, we have, there's not a position in Washington, D.C. We hire a lobbying firm, and we go out for competitive bids periodically and keep them on for maybe 2 to 3 years, I think is probably the duration of the contract. We pay about $120,000 a year for that. So that's $240,000 a biennium. And the increase in just one of the federal programs was in the, I think, $15 million range. So it's in multiples that we get a return on their presence in Washington, multiple million dollars.
So for $240,000 approximately, you have $15 million in additional revenue.
Mr. Chairman, we actually got more than that out of P-21 And we've got an increase in the proportionate share that Oregon got as a return in some particular categories that were important to us, like federal lands, highways. So the point of having the lobbyist is to get a better return on our dollar back there. Do you have actual numbers, Mike? That
Mr. Chair, in our response on May 19th, there's a letter in there answering the question how many people are in government relations, what do they do, and then also talks about the return information about the federal funds in the position. I'd be happy to get that extra copy to you if it'd be helpful.
Okay. Are there any questions by committee members?
Mr. Chair, I guess the 800,000 or so increase from 97.99 to 99.01, just in the line, the public affairs and employee what?
Communications.
Okay. I'm wondering if that could be explained.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Chutub, just to clarify, it's in the government relations budget that the DC lobbyist is present, and now we're getting you some additional information in the public affairs employee communications side. These are just in terms of the work that they do. We have someone assigned to each of the divisions, like DMV, motor carrier, that sort of thing, and then to the regions. All of Region 5 has either a full-time person or part of a person in public affairs to put out information related to the roads in that area primarily. And I can't speak right now. Mike's going around trying to find out to specifically identify the information.
I guess my concern, Mr. Chair, is that since we did have a fairly active lobbying in order to get us the T21 money, which is now behind us, my question would be is what is it that we're pumping more money into this for? And I mean, you don't, whenever you can answer that, I would like to know what that is.
In other words, how much money has to go into fund the well to get more?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Chutub, the reason to have someone in Washington, D.C. is it doesn't really go away if you make them work extra hard and there's some kind of a booster. But each year, for example, the appropriations bill, the appropriations committee puts out generally two bills, an appropriations bill and a supplemental bill. We try and get anything we can for Oregon in that sense. We have the grant work that we do in putting grants together to apply for the very various discretionary categories that they have. We put the grant together here, but what the lobbyist does in Washington, D.C. is go around to congressional offices and give them the specific backup information and then go over to the Department of Transportation. Oftentimes, the work that needs to be done is really with the Department of Transportation, so they represent us in Washington. I only go to Washington about twice a year. We have a person here that coordinates all of the Washington stuff. He goes about five times a year, generally stays about three to 5 days. And so by having a firm in Washington that's competitively bid, we feel we do a good job by not having to put a full-time staff person back there. Some departments do have full-time staff people in Washington. So it's the day-to-day maintenance of issues that we have either before Congress or before the Department of Transportation that they're monitoring. On top of that, what they do is they keep track of, as broad-based discussions are going on, the Commerce Committee is thinking about changing the rail program, or the Public Works Committee is thinking about changing truck size and weight. For example, up this year, truck size and weight, there's some aviation legislation going on. And so they sit through those general hearings. They generally have a portfolio of clients that they have. We pay for part of that. And they monitor many of the committees that we don't generally live and breathe except during the regular markup. So, for example, right now, Congress is considering taking off what they have on right now, a freeze on truck size and weight. Congress could legislate over and above legislature's decisions that we have to take certain size weight trucks, for example, due to the interstate commerce clauses out there. Keep a lobbyist back there to keep us informed as to what's going on that legislation, because we have an interest in that legislation in that we permit trucks up to 105,500 pounds. There are some states that allow trucks to go up to 129. town, for example. If that were to become law in an issue just like that without Oregon having identified what its issues are, we would have a very significant impact on our roads. So it's eyes and ears on Washington and all the little subcommittees and committees that we care about, but we can't possibly have someone go back there efficiently and monitor ourselves.
And there's good job.
Just let me clarify that the line of government relations, when I see government relations, what I think of is what you're talking about in Washington, D.C., and then public affairs and employee communication then would be something different. I would like to just try to understand the difference between the two, but the increase in government relations is understandable in a two-year period at $34,073. It's the public affairs and employee communications, again, that's almost $1 million, $800,000. And I would just like to have a little clarification between the two. What is the function of each of those things? And, you know, I understand we have to lobby. That is clear to me, and we have to watch those bills. That's not my issue, I guess, is which is which and why 800,000.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Chisholm, I'm going to begin the discussion, and I'm going to talk the final part, which is to your last question, probably more specific, so it might be, just to make sure we get the record clear. Mm-hmm. The increases we benefited from in IT's discussion was about $57.8 million to the state for the overall IT. We defeated some changes to the Federal Lands Highway Program, which Oregon benefits from greatly, and we received over $51 million in emergency relief money. Those emergency relief requests have to be worked both on the Hill and in the departments. So I think that we've more than gotten our return on those dollars many fold over. An overall comment on the difference between the two. They're really separate functions. They're in the same division. They're related. In the government relations function is Joan Plank, our lobbyist for the legislature. All functions related to state and local government relations and federal relations. In the public affairs side, it's all the communications that we put out. Just some examples of things that are common that you understand that they do, that this would be the headquarters function, would be things like studded tire changes when we go through an announcement and a release to everyone. Any kind of change in the rules that we're making, they communicate on a regular basis what's going on. Weather changes. Our internet, we have a website that has a zillion hits a year on it. They maintain all of that. Employee communications, when I came on and looked at some of what had preceded me, there were a lot of lack of communications with employees. That's the work that they do, generally speaking. So it's internal communications, external communications, any kind of official press releases we need. They did quite a bit of work when the tunnel collapsed, for example. Mm-hmm. Mike, that's a general introduction. Do you want to
Mr. Chair and Senator Keith have two things. First of all, page 77 of the program budget is a little helpful in separating out government relations from public affairs and employee communications if the members wish to take a look at that. In terms of the change that we're looking at on the prior page 75, the discussion of the communications area and the fact that the options for change reduces communications by $175,000 in 1999-01, and internal shifts within central services increase communications by $763,000, which are offset by reductions in the director's office and other central services. So it's a matter of shift, again, within the budget. But I also want to make sure that description was understood on page 77, the difference between government relations and public affairs.
Okay. Part of the frustration is we're going to receive this on the floor of the Senate and probably the floor of the House is that our colleagues want to know where this money is being spent, how, and why. And unless we have a basis of understanding some of those numerical equations, what it translates into, this amount of money is spent for lobbying, this amount of money is generated, and show what the cost and effect relationship is, we're going to be kind of in a difficult dilemma in trying to respond to some of our colleagues. Now, I'm not trying to micromanage your your shop, but I think what we are trying to do is get down to nubbins and say, all right, this is what we do for this amount of money. What could you do for more? Or is more not necessary? You might get by on less.
Mr. Chair, make sure we're clear. Under the portion called lobbying, we have a sheet in that describes that, that Grace just spoke from, that talks about the return on what the lobbyists do.
Okay.
And we can separate the amount of money easily within government relations to show you what goes through federal as compared to state, if that would be helpful. Would you like to have a
statement, yes.
Mr. Chair?
Okay. Yes, please.
So we'll, within government relations, we'll separate state from federal, and that sheet that Grace spoke from discusses the federal return on that work. On the public affairs, that amount is appropriate within the budget. That is all public affairs, employee communications work. In terms of the work that's going on there, is it something that you'd like to have us clarify more for employee communications, or is that coming across clear?
Well, let me give an example, and there was a statement that was made last week on the floor of the Senate on the state police budget, and someone made an off-the-cuff remark that this may be the only transportation bill this session that we get to vote on in the Senate. And one of the other members got up and said, well, we don't need to vote on transportation because they have $900 million more than they had last by even. Those kind of statements, regardless whether they're true or not, impact what other people hear and impact ultimate decisions. Now, $900 million by classifying T21 and maintenance funds and bridge maintenance and all these things together, maybe you do in fact have the additional money, but it's for a designated purpose. But when the member stands up and makes these kinds of statements, I want to be able to refute it or counter it because I understand how the budgetary process works. I don't want somebody hammering me over the head all day and saying, well, why do you want us to go for this budget? There's $900 million more in revenue to ODOT.
Mr. Chair, I think I want to, as far as making the response on that specific question, page 17 of the program budget talks about the change in the highway area, which is where most of the T21 money goes, and so that we're all clear about comments such as that. The 97.99 amount within all of highway, with federal and state together, is $1.14 billion, and in the new biennium, it's $1.39 billion. So we are talking about an increase. We are talking about the fact that much of that is for earmarked funds, but it certainly isn't in the neighborhood of $900 million, wherever that amount came from. We are looking at about $250 million of total increase, which also includes all of our salary adjustments and every other piece of the budget. But the majority of that money coming in is not just general use funds. Plus, within our overall budget, we do have some general funds. We do have some funds that are going not towards projects. So I wanted to make sure I can separate that out, and if it's helpful to...
It would be very helpful, because I think whoever carries the budget bill needs to be able to respond to questions that are going to be asked of us. And I know for a fact that the questions are going to be, and it might be helpful for all the committee members to have the same information as well. Representative Butler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Still in all, the total expenditures moving from $1,147,000,000 to $1,398,000,000 is a 22% increase for the biennium. And I'm coming back to the issues relative to the Washington, D.C. office. I just wondered how closely our lobbyists and the government affairs lobbyists in Washington, D.C. works with the AOC and the LOC, both of whom have full-time staff or at least direct national association staff. in Washington that could be doing some of these same kinds of things? Are they coordinating their efforts so that we're getting the maximum bang for the buck out of Oregon cities and Oregon counties that have representation from the National Association of Science?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Butler, we do a lot of coordination with both the cities and counties here and with the AOC, LOC at the National League of Cities and the NACO, the National Association of Counties. We share what we can. Our interests aren't always the same. And there's a lot of work that we have to do that sets the base for what needs to be considered like the rules and the regulations where we're editing federal regulation, commenting on saying we don't like this or we like that, which AOC and LOC sometimes have the same interest in and sometimes do not. We too have a state highway dothead organization called the American Association of State Highway and Transportation Officials in Washington, and we work extensively with them. They don't always agree with, you know, the laws of Oregon, and we're trying to defend our laws, you know, back in Washington. So I think there is maximum coordination, and we take advantage of anything we can of coordinating.
Follow up together. Maybe I could have you, Grace, just help me for a moment to find out where we would be, what are the most significant differences between our Department of Transportation head in Washington and our department head and our ODOT approach, and the same with, let's say, AOC. What is our most significant difference between AOC and NACO on transportation issues?
Chairman Hannon, Representative Butler, I don't know that I can pick off, you know, the top three items that are there, but I'll give you some examples where we differ.
Okay, please.
In the federal aid bill prior to IT, there was a set-aside fund called the Federal Aid Secondary Money. That was an allocation directly to counties. Okay. I happened to be with a city at that time, and there's also a federal aid category for cities. What happened when they went to IT, there was a big urging from the state government's point of view to take these zillion categories of highway funding we had, and there was every little nook and cranny, and try and consolidate into bigger programs so there was more of a emphasis on the big systems or emphasis on the smaller systems. And so in that smush, I think the counties were trying to defend their own category, and the state was saying if you could make it a little bit more easier to blend some categories, we wouldn't have this accounting nightmare that we had on categories of funding. So I believe NACO was probably trying to defend their particular category, saying let's mush them together. There are also some things that we worry about, like the Federal Lands Highway Program, that I'm not sure either the counties are a little uncertain about or have no opinion on. I'm just inventing at this point in time where there might be a difference there, but it's a category Oregon pushes hard for because Oregon benefits from, and there are several other western states that benefit from, but places like Connecticut and New Jersey don't have a lot of federally owned land the way Oregon has a huge portion of its state that's owned, and so maintaining a special program for Oregon is important. Alaska works really hard to maintain those programs are flexible. They don't have a massive road system, but they have little airports, and so they're always trying to get a road system that meets their needs. We, for example, don't lobby for the ferry systems, but there are six or eight states that have ferry systems, like Seattle has an extensive ferry system, which is part of their highway system. It's the only way they link roads on one side of the Sound to roads on the other. We don't spend any of our time there. Well, they're out pushing for that. We may be pushing against that, for example. I didn't mean to get off the course of the county. Local bridges is another issue we try and work together on. The counties want to make sure that when we have a bridge program, that their bridges are included and funding for their bridges is made from Washington, D.C. From the state's point of view, we too have bridges, and we are trying to get jurisdictionally blind bridge categories. So far in Oregon, AOC is working against us, but as that issue comes up, everyone comes from a slightly different position. People want more money for bridges, but they also want to have more control over their funds, and so more categorization might help the what's called off-system bridges and we would be for more flexibility within the bridge category.
Thank you. Senator Yeen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the same line of thought, do you work closely with our congressional delegates because they're in a position to be helpful for the state? I mean, do you work closely with them? Because I don't understand why do you need 30 people in the public government relations and public communication?
Senator, if I could, perhaps I headed us down the wrong road here. Ms. Jordan suggested that we look at that more explicitly when we get to that element of her recommendations, because she's going to give some possible recommendations that might change some of those figures. So if we could, I understand where you're trying to head, but if we can get back on the workstation here and try to move or accept some of these recommendations, I think we should move in that direction. And once we get on there, I apologize to the chair for starting to share that.
Yeah. I know, Mr. Chairman, you have asked for a breakdown of federal income and the return in investment we receive from the federal Washington, D.C. lobbyists. Those are important questions. And I would like to...
Did you get a copy of the printout that just ended up?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Is the breakout in here?
Mr. Chair, that shows a return on investment of their kind through the additional emergency monies and through the other monies that were added through T21. So the chair has more...
We would like to understand why do we need that many people in the lobby, in the... government relations.
Well, they're dealing with 535 elected officials as compared to 90 here. So it's a lot different back there.
Mr. Chairman, if I could, Mr. Chairman, we have one person that deals with the federal stuff. The rest of these people are all allocated to other activities. The lobbying function in Washington, there is a firm in Washington that we hire, but the FTE... In this budget, only one person has anything to do with the federal lobbying on a full-time basis. Joan Frank, our government relations person, oversees that person. I spend some time worrying about that, but in terms of FTE, there's only one person. To the total budget, the question that was asked earlier on the increases there isn't an increase. I think it's important to note that there isn't an increase in the public affairs budget that isn't attributable to decreases in other budgets. You'll notice the director's office line item goes down. We're not beefing up that shop or anything due to some other shifts that have occurred in our technical services area and the central services area. This shows an increase here, but the decrease is comparable on other line items. Mike has a more specific breakout, Mr. Chairman, and we'll wait till you get to that part of the budget as you instructed. But I didn't want you to have the impression that we were aggressively trying to beef anything up there. It's flat. It's just that, as we've accounted for, we said earlier, when Mike came on board, generally speaking, he noted that in our information systems shop, indeed, there were some other shifts of things that occurred, and so we've tracked that, and we'll present that at a later point.
Well, we'll get back on track here now with LFO, but the thing I want to point out to you, Grace, is that you probably understand this shifting, but we don't understand the shifting, because just about the time we get grasp on a number, it squirts out and moves somewhere else in some other item. And although you may understand the number process, we don't. And we're going to be bombarded by questions asking us to explain different things. And unless we have a comfort level that indicates that we understand that it's going to be a very frustrating process. So I'm not trying to micromanage your agency. I'm just trying to get some information so that committee members understand what we're being asked to do. But shifting it from here to here, you can show reductions, but it's an increase somewhere else. And I don't fault you, Mr. Marsh, because you're... life has been working in the executive department trying to find little loopholes to funnel money in, and been quite successful at it.
Mr. Chair, you're
a good friend.
I'm hoping I'm trying to help the committee and not cause...
No, you're helping us, Mike.
Just to make one quick note, it is complex. Page 74 of the program budget shows this, the major shifts that are occurring within central services, and I'd be happy to go into more detail with the great discussion.
Okay. All right. Ms. Gordon.
Mr. Chair, I can also be of assistance to the committee when you have some of those questions, because I am familiar with the shifts, where they came and where they went throughout the budget. And I'll try to explain that as we go through.
Would it be too difficult to get a put and take? You're going to put this here, and you're going to take away from over there, so
it's
already in the book.
Your program book.
Okay. It would be helpful to have that for information, too.
Might be helpful, Mr. Chair, to bring it out of the book and put it in kind of a, I know it might be a lot of work, but if
Mr. Chair, we can, as we go through the work session, we can try and keep track of all of those major discussion areas and put together something at the end for you to take it in.
Yeah. All right. Can I feel like an explanation on why do they need 29 people in public relations?
We'll talk about it
when we get there.
Okay.
And we'll get to your question.
Right.
All right, Ms. Jordan.
Okay, Mr. Chair, as I mentioned, that first packet of information was for you to keep with you so that you have a reference on some of the questions that will come up, and we will summarize that at the end when we finalize this budget as well. The second thing on my memo is the transportation growth management. The committee had asked that I do an analysis of the administration on transportation growth management, and there is a paper that I have attached to your, or it's in front of you. I'm looking at the cat, what it looks like. It's entitled Transportation Growth Management. What I did was try to break out for you the different components of the Transportation Growth Management Program between DLCD and ODOT, or the combination of the two. And it appears that there is only 3% of the total program going to management coordination and administration, that 20% of the program is technical assistance or grant management, which is a part of the overall program that is the assistance that's provided to the local government. Now, what I didn't do here was try and analyze whether that technical assistance is appropriate or not. It is to the extent that is the oversight that the departments need to provide for the grant program. And in the substantive area, what I would suggest is if you want to reduce that or evaluate that you have a budget note that does that during the interim. There's not time during the session to do that work now. I believe that under the current program, the administration is of that program is minimal. And you have some captions that show where the FTE are in DLCD for what technical assistance they are providing and what technical assistance is being provided by ODOT.
Okay, and it would be the chair's intention. Ways and Means can introduce a bill any time, and it would be the chair's intention after speaking on Friday with the co-chairs to take the Transportation Growth Management and the Community Solutions teams from all these different state agencies, Housing, Community Services, DEQ, LCDC, ODOT, and put them all in one bill so we can look at, see what component is which, where the money is traced to, and make sure that the identifiable services are appropriately conducted for the identifiable amount of budget, so we're not tapping into the kitty for other unrelated activities and saying we're just moving funds around from within the budget. Yes.
I just wanted to mention that transportation growth management is not an element of the community solutions team. They are separate programs.
But we want to make it all inclusive so that we can put all the cards out on the table and deal with it up front.
That's exactly the point I wanted to make, Mr. Chair, that Ms. Jordan just made, and that is that the transportation growth management has some separate functions from the community solutions program. But
some of their activities are intertwined. As an example, if you look here, the technical assistance, they provide the local government by reviewing developmental proposals. Then you look at the grants for local governments and special districts, transportation funding rule, land use alternative, transportation goals, and again, some of these functions are intertwined. And what we're doing is trying to get a clear delineation of what these functions are.
Thank you for that clarification.
Representative Schrader.
I assume then that what we're going to be doing is, in this separate bill, be dealing with those things within transportation growth management that we think applies to the CST approach, and then there'll be other things from TGM that will stay within whatever TGM program that ODOT has. Is that correct?
That would probably be a truer reflection rather than saying all of transportation growth management goes in one bill, but want to
understood then.
Interface with those decisions that can be rendered at the local level rather than saying, well, you start out at the local level and you might wind up at the state level.
Are there further questions or comments on that?
Okay, Ms. Jordan.
Mr. Chair. The final thing that I wanted to go over before we started into LFO recommendations was just to highlight for you the work that the department has done in developing a program budget so that you can have better information in this budget review. The chart that I gave you shows what the organizational budget format was for 97-99 and what information programs the committees had to work from, which included only 9 areas, transportation systems, development, which included all of the modes, that's public transit, aeronautics, rail, traffic safety, and transportation development. Then they had transportation system maintenance, construction reimbursables, which was all of the highway components, and driver and motor vehicles, motor carrier central, and board of maritime pilots. And as you can see, moving to the right-hand column, the department has made an extreme effort to break all of those costs out so that you have, you can see the components in the various programs that they operate. So now highway is in, I believe, 10 program areas: maintenance, preservation, bridge, operations, modernization, planning, special programs, emergency relief, and local government. And within each of those, they can break it down for you so you can ask more specific questions and get better information. They've also separated now aeronautics, transit, safety, and transportation development and rail into separate programs, and driver, motor vehicles, motor carrier, and central remain the same, board of maritime pilots, and then non-limited and capital areas. So you've had the benefit of more detailed information and are more equipped to go into for a session and answer questions than we were in the last session.
Okay.
And in combination with that, then, this biennium, we asked them to do a high-level look at from a zero-based review. It wasn't a pure zero-based, but you did get that next level of detail that they are able to provide now in those budgets. And that does make for better decision making.
Senator Kutcher.
Thank you. Public transit and rail, is light rail in the rail or is it in public transit?
There is no light rail in the Department of Transportation's budget. There is some debt service for the west side light rail, and it is separate down at the bottom under light rail. But other than that, there is no light rail in the Department of Transportation budget.
When there was, where did it appear?
Would have appeared under rail. Oh, transit.
Ms. Marsh?
Mr. Chair, I'm not familiar with when it was actually in as a program. It's always been debt service to my knowledge, but that...
Let me ask you a follow-up on that question. Under rail, would that be the $14
million? Yes, Mr. Chair. Sure.
For the...
Willamette. Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Duke.
Isn't there some additional money for upgrading Great Crossing? Some federal money that's $200,000? Is that what is in my brain?
Mr. Chair, that $600,000 package that being shipped as the highway for railroad grade crossing protection, and that would be in the rail budget.
It's T21 money that came, but it's dedicated to rail.
Okay. All right, Ms. Jordan.
Okay, with that, I'm going to briefly summarize that large packet of information that you all had, and then what I'd like to do is go through it program by program, starting with the highway program. In general, my recommendations reflect the fact that there is no general fund money available to fund the senior and disabled transportation package. That is the $10 million in general fund that was requested for operations, and the $14 million that was requested for the Willamette Valley High-Speed Rail package. So at this time, there are no resources identified for those packages, and my recommendation reflects that decrease. There is also reflected in my recommendation the 4% efficiencies reduction to any general funds programs taken in the current service level. So you'll see those throughout my recommendations. Any packages that are tied to substantive legislation that have not yet passed those houses or are slowly moving through will be deferred until that final legislation has been acted upon. And then those packages can either include the expenditure limitation or they can come to the First Emergency Board and request those limitations. The packages that were funded by revenue bonds are also deferred for action on the substantive legislation authorizing the issuance of those bonds. Those are two packages. One is the transportation, the local network, where they propose funding to purchase right-of-ways to assist in the construction of the roads that access state highways or would help divert traffic off of our state highways. And then there was a $30 million in purchasing right-of-ways for mitigating congestion.
Representative Patrick,
do you have those bill numbers on this?
I will tell you what they are when we get to them. I do.
Okay.
And then I've made a number of technical adjustments reducing expenditures and or scheduling, so some specific actions taken, and I will detail that as we go through, and then there are a series of budget notes. The final thing that my recommendation does is amend the expenditure limitation bill to provide separate limitations for each of the program areas, so you'll also see that in my memorandum.
Okay, are there any questions?
And Mr. Chair, we're ready to
move to
highway, which is the little red tab that I have put in your packet. So because it's not, doesn't directly follow the map.
Okay. Oh. You have it.
We're looking off of a very thick packet that I handed out last week for you to look at.
I've got extra copies here. And all this is super.
It might even be in your file if you took it on to it.
Okay, Ms. Gordon.
Highway maintenance is the first program area, and the you have I've provided you three different views of the program area. One is the first is to summarize the governor's recommended budget, what I believe were the budget issues that have been raised, and then summarize my recommendations. Behind that is a detailed spreadsheet of the budget as it was developed, and then a comparison between the governor's revised budget and the LFO recommended budget in total numbers. The budget issues for maintenance are the aging infrastructure that results in the more complex maintenance projects, and as it continues to age, the projects get more expensive. And then finally, the new environmental regulations and restrictions that require more costlier processes, and not seven materials, but end materials. My recommendation is to approve the budget in the amount of $292,859,876 and the $1,349.62 FTE by making the following adjustments to their budget. I'd reduce their attorney general charges $12,000. That's for the efficiencies that were found in the attorney general budget. Reduce $100,742.72 FTE to reflect recruitment period of FTE in the packages 108 and 109. The agency is requesting that the budget is for 24 months, and I believe that they will actually only have them for 22 months. Reduce the $11 million for the repair of the studded tire damage. That policy package is tied to substantive legislation that can be included in the expenditure limitation if approved by the legislature. And you asked which legislation that was. Package number 126, and it's House Bill 2201. I'm recommending.
That was Representative Patrick. That was in response to a question you just asked momentarily ago. House Bill 2201.
Repairing
for the target.
That's the set of targeting.
Yeah, but there's several other bills. Ms. Jordan's going to provide you those bill numbers as well.
Right.
That's a bill. It eliminates the use of credit files. I mean, how are we going to
restore
the damage?
Mr. Pearson, the bill, as I recall, requires a permit fee for people who purchase studded tires, and a permit fee that will be used to repair the damage.
Mr. Chairman, yes. Follow-up question. So, will the fees they anticipate to receive if a bill passes make up for $11 million?
Mr. Chair, that's
the
correct.
Okay.
Mr. Chair. Representative Patrick, I'm just wondering why
is more, I mean, we've had a set of tires for so long. Is that cost not generally been rolled up in the budget, or have I had to come to the e-board for that? Or I'm just wondering, I mean, it seems like we're, if we pass it, we give them back to $11 million.
Mr.
I'm trying to deal with
Chair, Representative Patrick, in the past we've used highway gas tax money to make those repairs, and as that revenue source shrinks for use on the roads for modernization and for preservation, we're looking for ways, or the department is looking for ways to recover costs where users are specifically causing the damage, and in this case that would be people who are using set of tires. So this is a way to recover the cost of repair for those people that choose to use that method of trucking.
Mr. Chairman.
This one. Are you finished?
Yeah.
Okay. Cindy Yee.
So this is for the new users that can charge and pay for some of the damage. What about the current users? They will continue to cause damage to the roads. And are those costs covered in the budget?
Mr. Chair.
Those costs are not, because they do maintenance using existing highway funds, but it doesn't deal enough with repair on all the roads. That's the reason for the legislation, and the legislation is not in this committee yet. But it has a way to go through the process. But the reason LFO is recommending taking this out is that we can come back in the emergency board and approve the expenditure limitation for this amount if in fact the bill passes.
Mm-hmm. And that's become the new user.
Right.
Damage.
Right. Senator Duke.
So nice and point out. If I get this right, we're going to transfer money from mostly federal, but from drivers who pay gas taxes out to things like land use. And then because we don't have enough money to repair the roads, we're going to go add another fee on people who drive cars instead of cars. Just wanted to get it straight. I mean, if the answer is we don't have enough money because the revenues are declining, but then out the back door, we're taking money to put it into things that are not, they're related to roads, but not too directly.
I believe that the department's initiative was to look more for those users who are causing the damage, much like we charge more for truckers who are heavier weights on the roads to pay for their damage, and that this bill, which is in the substantive committee, would help recover some of those costs from a particular user, not to shift money from highway to.
Theoretically, it's a cost responsibility bill, but for somebody like me who puts 30-some thousand miles a year in a car and uses studded tires as a way to get around my district, I pay exactly the same amount as somebody who whose studded tires last them for 6 years.
Okay. Representative Patrick.
I've got another question while we're on highway maintenance. In looking ahead at the highway local government program that we mentioned previously and the bonding package that was talked about, in terms of that, I'm wondering what the correlation between spending that money on local street area networks is going to have on the any kind of decrease we can have on the highway maintenance program. I'm wondering what the correlation is between the two if we choose to make some investments. I know in Metro, the studies that ODOT just did in regards to the North South arterial, I'm just wondering what the correlation is between expending some money offline in roads that are within cities to take some of that transportation network. And I don't know if there's any direct correlation that you can draw. I think it probably varies from piece to piece.
Is your question related to whether ODOT would continue, would have to maintain those roads that they put an investment in, or would there be a cost to the state, or?
Well, I guess what I'm saying is,
by
what I'm saying is,
off
by trying to take, I know that the street network program, depending on another piece of policy legislation passing, that requires some revenue for them. And if it makes some sense to decrease the amount of maintenance if we invest in local area streets, does that make some sense? I'm trying to get what the correlation is between the two. But we can make some decisions as we move forward. And I will say that it will dramatically affect what's happening in my city in Memphis in terms of local area streets. But what I'm asking is on a statewide basis, does that make some sense? Because it defers miles being traveled on interstate highways, and therefore I would assume would defer the cost of maintaining some of those highways because there's less vehicle miles traveled. But I'm just wondering what the correlation is as we look at this. Because there's more lanes in local streets that works unless you have that bonding package.
Right.
Just looking at the money within the maintenance budget ahead of time.
Ray, would you like to respond, please?
Representative Passage, I believe it's $5.8 million to pay for the money comes out of the highway portion, so we're down 5.8 in order to have the program. The purpose of the program is to provide some alleviation of traffic congestion problems we have on the state highway system in areas where expanding the state highway system probably doesn't make as much sense as building an alternative network on a local system. And so there's both a congestion element, which is closer to the modernization program really than maintenance, but there is a maintenance piece in that our roads being less traveled and county and city roads being more traveled means that there's a bit of a take away from the need, a take away from the demand on the system when you have that. But I think because the dollars, the $5.8 million payback that goes on, I think there's probably a bigger alleviating the congestion on those roads than there is on the maintenance. And I characterize it slightly differently.
Is there a recommendation, because that's part of the bond, where's the $5.8 million of the bond debt service going to come from if we would approve that bond package? So we have to come find it somewhere else?
Chair, Representative Patrick, that money would be paid out of the highway funds, and it is a debt service that is in a non-limited budget. But that has also been removed as a result of my recommendation from the
right. Yeah.
Okay, Ms. Gordon.
Continuing on, I'm also recommending that we reduce the $1.5 million and one FTE for traffic control and cleanup at accident sites. That package is also tied to substantive legislation that is House Bill 2198 that can include the expenditure limitation if it's approved by the legislature or the they can come to the emergency board. And then finally, I'm recommending approval of the facility maintenance package as a one-time expenditure and as a budget note requesting that the department report to Ways and Means during the next legislative session on their long-range facility maintenance plan. The department has partnered with Oregon State University to develop and implement a long-range facility maintenance management plan. And that plan is expected to be completed by the end of this biennium. And so I am recommending that the second budget note on the next page that the department report to Ways and Means during the next session on that long-range facility maintenance plan that includes a system for tracking inventory, the condition rating facilities, life expectancy, and the needed repairs and estimated repair and replacement costs. That information wasn't available. The other budget note is that the Department of Transportation is expected to take necessary steps to ensure that the department personnel in the regions and districts are aware of the policy and responsibilities for collaborating with the local jurisdiction to achieve cost savings and operational efficiencies through intergovernmental partnerships, particularly in the area of roadway maintenance, and that the department shall provide a report on the results of these efforts to Ways and Means during the next regular session. That budget note was requested by a subcommittee during the public hearing.
Okay, you've heard the recommendation, Representative Schrader.
I had another concern in this budget presentation with regard to the zero base presentation made by the maintenance division. I realize it's kind of a new concept and hard to kind of work into, but there's a big difference between the presentation we have from the Central Services Division and the Highway Maintenance. And I particularly, I was very concerned that the result of the zero-based budgeting had no FTE reduction at all and just basically said, we'll do a crummier job because we don't have enough materials. And that's not the way I would look at that. I mean, I think the clear direction from our committee and from the legislature should be that, all right, if we're going to ask you guys to do this, I would like you to prioritize what roadways you're going to be doing a good job on and what roadways we don't get to in a timely fashion. And I think that way we'd be able to really understand the full impact of the policy. So I'm interested in introducing the budget notes, sir, that would encourage them to come back one more time during interim to the e-board, maybe explaining in a little better detail. And I'd like to read that suggestion and have their comments.
Before you do, Mr. Doug Tindall, maintenance engineer, and chair that maybe try to help you sort through this name. Mr. Tindall.
Chair Hannon, members of the committee, Doug Tindall, maintenance engineer of the Oregon Department of Transportation, Chair Hannon, Representative Schrader. We discussed a methodology that we're putting in place now that we're one of the few states that are starting on this. Nobody's actually completed yet, although Washington's a little farther than we are. But it would do exactly what you're talking about. It would define expected levels of maintenance in different categories that correspond basically to these categories on different types of roadways. It's an iterative process because no one's done it before, and what we can't do is we can't tie yet people and dollars to different levels of service. That's what no state has solved the problem of doing that yet. So we're working through that to try and get the answer to the question that you're asking, or at least I think it's the answer to the question.
Representative Schrader.
I appreciate his interest in explanation, but I would think it'd be fairly easy. In other words, if you do striping across the state of Oregon and you usually put on X thickness and you do it on a certain rotation basis, that to keep the green thickness, you would obviously end up having less crews going over these roads less frequently. That's how you save the money, and you still do a good job where you actually lay the paint down. It seems very straightforward to me. And the answer you come back to us with is, say, well, that's a great idea, Representative Schrader, but on Highway 26 in your district, you know, we're just not going to be able to stripe that, but every 3 or 4 years at the rate, the rate you're talking about. And that would be good information for us to have. And then we could, I think, look at your zero base plan and make some decisions about, yeah, every 3 years is fine. Or, oh, no, man, that's terrible. You can't even see the line after, 6 months up there. That's the type of information I think is very, very easy to get at. And I think that could be true with the roadside vegetation, the snow and ice, the bridge maintenance, all these different categories. And then you start building the budget from the bottom up, kind of like I think was the original intent. And I know it's a new exercise, so I am sympathetic there. But the explanation doesn't make me feel that you just gave on this channel doesn't make me feel a whole lot better that you're understanding the process that I'm looking for. If I'm the only person on the committee that's interested in building it from the bottom up and seeing, the crews that we would be laying off or not using if we went along these lines, then that's fine. I'll leave it go. But I think it has some validity because otherwise, next time it would be in some of the same. And I'm not. My suggestion would be just on schedule for funds.
If I should suggest that if you would meet with LFO staff to jointly work out to reflect part of her recommendation into your budget note, we can bring it back for consideration tomorrow.
Okay, that'd be fine.
But
Mr. Kimball too, hopefully, in the meantime.
To give Representative Schrader input, yesterday they were striping on I-5 again. As I was driving back, and they weren't state employees. It was a plia line or something. And so I can assure you they're out there 7 days a week working.
Sure.
They may not be able to do Highway 26 once but every 3 years, but they're doing I-5
daily, it seems like. So,
only when you travel the world.
it slows me down, that's for sure.
Then the rest of us. You'll be out there for the 3-day weekend next weekend?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
I don't know, I bet you we'll be paying kind of half or triple time.
Okay, that's great.
Members of the committee, I apologize for handing out the corrected version of the maintenance program late. The change that I made was to move one of the budget notes to its appropriate place in a different program that had to do with the sign shop. And then on the spreadsheet behind it, I had made an error, and I corrected that by reducing an FTE that didn't exist.
The revised one is dated 5/21/99.
And that is what I read from.
Senator Davis.
Chair. The reductions here, where does that money go? I mean, it's not like the general fund where it just sort of can go to any place. My thought is, we went out and we looked and it didn't seem like there was enough money in gravel and paint and those kinds of things in maintenance. Is there some way we save money in maintenance but we can keep it in maintenance and put it in the gravel and paint?
Chair, the depends on the revenue source for the packages that are being reduced. The package or the amount of money being reduced for the Attorney General charges and the FTE for 2 months would coming from the highway fund, those monies could go back into materials and maintenance as you choose. The package for the $11 million is tied to a fee that was directed to that purpose, and the $1.5 million also for the accident sites would go to the repair of those accidents, so those monies would stay. You reduced the facility maintenance package that I recommended that you adopt. That money could also go into materials, but that would be, in my opinion, that would defeat the purpose of the maintenance program in their role.
Well, not a lot, Mr. Chair, but I'd love to see whatever it is we do stay there. I mean, they've been flatlined or reduced for the last few years.
Mr. Chair, Senator, there will be other areas in the budget that will be making reductions, and you can make some choices on where you want to put that money. So I'll try to. I will summarize that at the end, where those reductions are and what kinds of uses you can put that to.
Further questions? Representative Starr.
Thank you. Just a question. We've got some current CLFO recommendations of an extra 5 FTE. Where the zone please statement.
Mr. Chair, Representative Starr, program package 108 to maintain highway system assets adds 1 FTE. The package 109 has no dollar cost, but it shifts money from supplies and services to personal services and adds 8 FTE. And that is an increase of 9 FTE. I am recommending that there be a reduction of 1.72 FTE. I'm sorry, 0.72 FTE in that package. I mean, in those packages.
In other words, you're reducing, excuse me, the additional positions, you're reducing it down to 7.2?
Reducing 0.72 of the 9 FTE that's been requested by the department. If you look on the spreadsheet that is that details the government's revised budget and the packages, you'll see the current service level FTE. And then you'll see the package FTE that's being requested by the department and the total recommending total FTE for those packages.
Okay.
Does that help, Representative?
Yeah, that, and also the technical adjustment, 1.96, cruise adjustment. You see, add that in there, then you get
that in the, under that, yes.
Okay, that's great, yeah, thank you.
Further questions?
Senator
Yee.
So
Package 108, $5.3 million, are we adding to the whole budget?
Mr. Chair, it's going to be
adding to it. Is something that the department did not propose?
Senator, the department did propose that package. Yes. This is, these positions are to assure compliance with stormwater management fish requirements on transportation projects and addressing.
This is part of the fish recovery plan and includes money for ODOT to participate in that storm drain water.
Oh,
I see.
All nine of them?
Pardon me?
All nine of them?
Nine of them.
There's one at the E package.
Oh, this is the one I'm concerned that sometimes there's no fish, but they want to increase the cover size anyway, because fish and wildlife.
Mr. Chair, Kennedy, this package is introduced to complete design work on projects that that are in areas that have environmental issues, and these environmental engineers are required to look at those plans and specifications, and if they're not hired, it will hold up those projects even longer. So it's the design work that's being held up, and that's what this package is to address. Some of it is contract work, and some of it is.
Are you happy with this, George? Is that the right
thing?
Okay.
These other funds, 5 million other funds, are they, obviously the other funds, but,
Highway fund money. Yes.
If we didn't fund the position, this work would not happen, is that correct?
Mr.
General?
Chair Hannon, Representative Starr. Most of the money here is not to fund the position. This is our work is more complicated now because of new regulations and new features that we have. And this money is to fund those things that are in addition to what we've done in the past. Things that we're required to do now that we have not done in the past. It is highway fund money. So if you don't have this money, then some of the things that we're required to do by federal law or state law take more time, and I mean the money comes from somewhere else because it's not something we have a choice. We just tried to identify it for you as being here's some money that we need to spend that we didn't need to have to spend.
Senator Dukes?
It's an engineer position.
Chair Hannah, Senator Dukes, not the maintenance position. We have additional the one position we're talking about here is some of the additional features that we've had to put in to comply with the regulations just add to our workload.
Okay.
And
we'll go out and advise folks who are putting in culverts and designing storm systems and things as to how to do them so that they're fish friendly.
No, not exactly. Chair Hannah, Senator Dukes, I would characterize it more that this person will is more of a person that's going to be able to know how to maintain things once they're put in along the lines of clean water. Not so much fish as it is it's the storm drain and other environmental features such as wetland mitigation. We have to do wetlands. If we build a road that goes through a wetland, we have to mitigate it. And that requires, it's difficult, or it's a specialty to maintain a wetland.
Mr. Chair, it's kind of the position is classified as a transportation engineer, but it is in the maintenance division and has a maintenance focus.
Right.
It is an engineer position.
Assuming that a fair amount of this money is for stuff. I mean, not people, but culverts and
supplies.
Yeah, that
and construction.
$2.5 million a year seems like an awful lot of stuff, but I'm assuming that's what it's for, and that there's a lot of work to be done out there. My question about the engineer was only I've never figured out why it is we have as many engineers as we have when we're not really doing construction anymore. And so I just wondered if wouldn't it be possible to switch one of those over?
Chair Hannon and Senator Duke, simply not doing new construction doesn't eliminate the need for engineering. I mean, a lot of the decisions we make require professional judgment and technical analysis.
But we used to do a lot of new, which meant designing the new roads. And we're not doing as much of that anymore. We redesign stuff, and we fix, and we do that. But we did that before, too. So I just sort of figured that when you weren't doing one of the things you used to do, that would be reduced. Obviously incorrectly, but that's what I assume.
Chair Hannon and Senator Duke, I think you're exactly correct that our focus has shifted. But where we used to do a lot of new stuff and sort of not a whole lot of rehabilitative or preservative type functions, now we're doing a whole lot of rehabilitative and preservative type functions and not as much new stuff. So it's a shift in focus. I think that the net work, though, is not declined necessarily. The nature of the work has changed.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Duke's out of about 3,200 employees that work on the highways, only 130 are licensed engineers. We have an engineering series, and this position is part of it, where we're not requiring this person to have an engineer's degree. It's just an engineering series that kind of feeds into the general category of engineering.
Okay. You've heard the discussion. The chair would now move that we adopt the LFO recommendations to the highway maintenance, including the two budget notes, making some total recommended LFOs $292,859,876, 1,349.62 FTE. These recommendations were revised. Information was handed out dated 5/21/99. Is there discussion? Representative Schroeder.
We discussed maybe another budget.
Yes. This adopting this is only moving us to the next step, and we can come back and revisit this.
Mr. Chair, that is 1,350.62 FTE. I made an error, and on the instant response, there was no FTE associated with that package. So that's what increased the
FTE.
The dollar amount is
the same.
The dollar amount is the same. So it's still 292,859.876 with 1,350.62 FTE.
That's correct.
Okay. You've heard the motion to amend it. Is there further discussion? Is there objection? If not, it's been so approved. Ms. Jordan?
Chair, it is 9:45, and we can move to public preservation tomorrow.
Okay. Let me again remind my colleagues, if we can get here right away, the clock and start work session. The center was meeting earlier all week, and we want you to be here and participate in the work session. So we'll reconvene at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning.